Welcome back to the Abundant Culture Podcast, where business owners like you come to learn how to grow the valuation of their companies so they can sell in the future. On this show, you'll learn how to sell for top dollar and invest in profitable businesses around the country. Now, here are your hosts, Jazz and Joe.
Welcome back to Abundant Culture Podcast. This week, we have Mark on to talk more about the family business side and what that means when you sell your business and a whole bunch more, really. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, Mark, we have to ask you, what is your backstory? Like, give us that entrepreneurial journey.
Okay, so there's lots of parts to that. The first thing, of course, is my own little background. I went to Cornell University's hotel school, so that gave me a little background in business. And then I did my master's degree in family systems, family therapy. I worked as a family therapist for about 20 years. Then I went back to school and I got a doctorate in organizational change and in family business. So how did I get interested in family business? Well, there were two reasons for that. One was as a family therapist, well, I started seeing people who worked together. Two brothers showed up and they said, we're fighting a lot and we don't think that's really professional, but my brother drives me nuts. So I started to work with some people in that kind of situation. And thirdly, maybe most importantly, is I was working with my family. Well, you might say, how did that happen? Well, my dad started the business. He's a family therapist. Not only my dad, but my mom. Not only my mom, but my sister. Not only my sister, but my brother, one of my brothers. Okay, well, you can see this is a family business, and we hired a number of other therapists too. So for a psychological office, we were pretty big. We had four offices. We had about 10 or 12 therapists on our staff. So it's a little business for psychological offices. That's pretty big. So we were a family business, and my dad wisely said, even though we're small, we probably have every problem that every bigger business has.
Yeah.
So of course, I learned firsthand what it's like to work with your mom and your dad and your brother and all those things. And it became very clear to me that people didn't know much about how to work with family businesses, even the people who were the most enlightened. Now, obviously, the people who know most about families are family therapists. And most family therapists, of course, are wonderful people and wonderful therapists, but they don't know that much about business. And people who are very smart in business, and I think the smartest ones are often those in the change business, what we would call organizational change or organization development or change management, but they did not have a big understanding of family dynamic. Now, actually, most businesses are family businesses. They're owned by families. Now, when I say family business, most people think small businesses. And most small businesses are family businesses, your little grocery store, et cetera. But of course, there's Ford Motor Company. There's Rockefeller. There's a million quite large family businesses. There are supermarket chains. There are car chains. There are millions of multi-billion dollar businesses that are family owned, and maybe family members are working in those businesses or not. But these are all family businesses. So the family dynamics are somehow infiltrating into the business, either positively or negatively. So I said, ha, I think this is my niche. I think I could help the world here, right here, with families who are owning and or working in businesses on issues like how to move that business from one generation to the next, how to deal with conflicts between family shareholders or between family executives. Because in the end, what does everybody want? Everybody wants a happy family or reasonably happy. And nobody's perfect, right? And everybody wants a business that's growing, that's making money, where everybody's doing that kind of thing. It's not that complicated. But when it's bad, it's terrible. It's terrible. The idea that there may even be lawsuits between family members, that there can be conflicts where family members don't talk to each other for 10, 20, 40 years. I can tell you many stories about this, where families literally go to war with each other. These are terrible things. So most families do not want that. They want to find a way to work together peaceably, to have a happy family and a happy business. And I'm here to tell you that there are people, I'm not the only one in the world, of course, there's now a whole profession of people who work with family businesses to help them accomplish that. Okay, I'll stop here and let you ask some questions. You can see I can just keep going. Yeah.
No, but that's really awesome. Like, you know, I've heard of family therapy and I've heard of business consultants, but I've never heard of anybody who could pair the two together. And I think that's so important because, you know, like I do believe that a family business can be a very beautiful thing, but at the same time, it can also get really complicated. So along the lines of being complicated, what are some of the areas that you see a lot of families conflict about in regards to the family business?
Yeah, it's a relatively new area. So the main conflict, I think, has to do with a confusion in many people's minds between what I call the world of family and the world of business. I always say to my clients, you know, what's the difference between those two worlds? I always say to them, this is a test. You know, what is the world of family supposed to be about? And of course, they look at me like I'm kind of stupid, which of course I am kind of stupid. But anyways, I wait for them to give me the right answer. And the right answer is the world of family is supposed to be about love. Love. Unconditional love, right?
Yeah.
Unconditional love. That's what I hope, right? The mother or father should not say to their child, I love you more if you get all A's.
Right.
I love you more if you're a great salesperson. I love you more if you make $1 million for the company. That's not good parenting. That's bad parenting. Any therapist will tell you that, and so on and so forth, right? Family should be about, I love you, period. I want you to be happy. I want you to find your own niche in life. I want you to excel. I want you to have a productive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very different from the world of business. The world of business, of course, is about growing a business. It's about sales. It's about keeping costs down. It's about making money. It's about profit. It's about expanding one's market, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're working in a company and you don't perform, what happens? You fire the person. That's the end of the line. You don't do it maybe on day one. You wait until day 20 or 30 and you give them chances and so on and so forth. But you fire them.
Yeah.
Okay. Should you fire your son?
Wow.
That's a problem, right?
Yeah.
I gave a seminar many years ago, and I talked about the day we fired my mom. This is a true story. The day we fired my mom.
Please tell us.
And so I was talking about this story at a seminar that I gave, and at this seminar was a family, just the kids, not the parents. And the kids, when I say the kids, they're about 45 years old. Anyways, between 40 and 55. About 2 weeks, excuse me for one moment. About 2 weeks following the seminar, I got a call from an older woman. She said, "Is your name Mark Silverman?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, my kids told me they went to a seminar and they learned how to fire their mother, and I want to talk to you, young man." Well, this is one of the critical conflicts that family businesses face. What do we do when there's a family member who works in the business but is not working well? That might be a son or a daughter. Sometimes it's a parent, right? What do you do when the owner of the business is acting in an unprofessional way? What do you do if a son is getting into fights with other employees? What do you do if someone is acting in an aggressive way, or is taking drugs, or is drinking, or is not? Yeah. This is a problem. I worked with a case where there was a very large business, thousands of employees, and there were a number of family owners. And one of the younger members of the family was very aggressive, was getting into physical fights with some of the employees. And so the family owners, there were many, decided to fire that. Now, the father of that son, who was one of the major shareholders, was furious about that. Furious. And he never forgave his brothers for the firing of his son. He felt he should have been given more chances. There had been no rule book set up. There had been no policies set up. There had been no guidelines that say, okay, we're going to give family employees three chances to make things right. We're going to insist that people follow certain rules. What do we do if a family member develops a sweetheart deal? You know, they get special favors from the company. And then all the other family members say, well, that person gets a better deal than we get. That's not fair. And let's imagine for a moment that that's true. It's not fair. Well, you've got a built-in conflict.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so there's got to be a solution. There's got to be a way to figure this out. And part of the goal that I think, part of what helps to turn this around, is for everyone to come together and to figure out and agree on the values. What are the values that we're going to have that's underneath this business? Or what are the operating principles? What are they? Are we going to say the person with the most shares gets to make all the decisions? Are we going to say we as a group of shareholders are going to decide what the policies are? And the policies are that everybody screws up, but they only get to screw up three times? Are we going to say that shareholders get sweetheart deals? Are we going to say no shareholder gets sweetheart deals? Are we going to say, yes, if you drink at work, you do get fired here, even if your name is Smith and this is the Smith company? Are we going to say that if you're married to a Smith, you automatically get a job here? Are we going to say if you're married to a Smith, you automatically cannot work here? We have to have a whole set of rules. And we often call these rules what I call the family protocol or the family constitution. And who should write these rules? The family. They're the ones that have to live with them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're getting a little bit of the method to my madness. So I believe that the family business shareholders need to sit down together and to figure out what their goals are. Some people call that a mission statement, a vision statement, a values statement. That's a bunch of statements. It's going to take more than one day. And once that's clear, then we say, okay, how do we implement it? And that's when we write the protocol or the constitution. And we're going to write it. And in that protocol or constitution, we're going to include things like how to solve conflict and who makes what decision and where in the hierarchy that decision gets made. Is the rule in our family business, dad just decides everything? That's how some of them work.
Yeah.
Is that okay with everybody? Hey, somebody says, that's not okay with me. Oh, all the kids say, that's not okay with me. The kids are 67, by the way. All the kids, hey, that's not okay with me. Well, there's the door, buddy. Okay, well, maybe I want to take that door. Well, don't come home for dinner. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Well, family businesses are pretty exciting.
I see.
Now, most businesses in this country, you know what, are family businesses. Most payrolls in this country are developed by family businesses, but most people are not talking about these issues. And in my eyes, they're the central issues. And it is very difficult. I'm going to tell you a story, not from a company in this country, but from another country. Now, in this company, they had a very clear rule book. That's wonderful. Most companies don't. But they did, and it was developed well, and it was written well, and everyone participated, and so on and so forth. Okay, big company, it's worth a lot of money, and so on. Okay, so one of the main shareholders, family shareholders, at one day, he said, I want to sell my shares, which was his right, and there was a process and how to do that, and that's fine. Okay, and there was a way that to define what that meant, how many dollars that was worth. Okay. So he said, I want to sell. The price is clear. The money is available. So that, you know, you want to sell your shares. Today they're worth this many millions. You know, here's your check. Okay. But the CEO, who happened to be a family member and an excellent CEO, he said, if you want to do it, it's fine. He said, but I'd like to recommend to you not to do it. Why? He said, listen, we are planning to go public in about 3 or 4 years. And that means the value of these shares is going to go up roughly by a factor of 10. So if it's worth 1 million today, it's going to be worth about 10 million. That's what we think, between 10 or 12. Okay. Now it's up to you. We have the money in the bank. You want your money today. I can write you the check today. Everything's above board. There's no, you know, there's nothing hidden here. It's fine. But I'm telling you, I don't recommend it. No, the guy said, no, I want my money. I want it today, you know, within 3 months or something like that. Okay. So they signed it. They signed the deal. The guy got his check. Okay. 3 or 4 years later, as was planned, company went public, the value of the shares went up by a factor of 10 to 12. After that, that family shareholder and his children and his grandchildren never spoke to the other family members. Now, in this case, now, when I met them, that was maybe 15 to 20 years later. So, I mean, maybe it changed at year 25 or 30, I don't know. But at that time, okay. Now, this was a case where everything was above board and straightforward. And there was that kind of harm. Imagine in those cases where things are not quite so straightforward.
Yeah.
So the level of hurt that people can have in these relations is very deep. It's very difficult, right? Just like in the first story I was sharing with you, you know, hard enough to get fired, but a lot tougher to get fired by your dad.
Yeah, definitely.
Or by your mom or by your son or whatever it is. So I think the first seminar that I gave, which was many years ago, the first seminar I compared family business and gambling. I said, how big a gambler are you? It's a big gamble. Yeah.
I can see that. Definitely seems like it can definitely be one. Mm-hmm. Especially, so I like that idea of having this family rule book to like govern things and make sure that everything is done correctly and that there's at least not many surprises. One of the things I was wondering along with that is, so you mentioned, you know, having to fire a family member on a couple occasions, one of the things I was wondering from you is, what are the best ways that you've seen that actually being implemented? I mean, I feel like regardless of when you're firing somebody, no matter how well you do it, I think there's going to be some type of fallout just because nobody wants to be fired. But I guess what are the best practices that you've seen for that? Because that's just that's never been a question that I've ever asked myself. And I think a lot of business owners have never asked themselves that question either. So I just wanted to understand, what are some best practices for that?
So my first attorney, one of the things he said to me was, no surprises. Never surprise anybody. I thought that was very good advice. You know?
Yeah, it is.
Whatever you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're talking about a bill or something, right?
Yeah.
So let's say we're talking about a performance review system. Is there a performance review system? Now, of course, in a family business, a lot of times the family members think, well, I'm partially an owner here, so I don't need to be reviewed. Performance reviews are for other people.
Yeah.
Right. Like the employees, not for like people who own the company.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even if I only own 1%, that should exempt me. So that's why it's very important to do this rule book, right? That says, hey, everybody's going to get a performance review. What a concept. That's a big deal, right? And that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Now we take your question, well, what does a good performance review system look like? Well, I think a good performance review system looks like one with 360 degrees, where there's feedback from the top, from your level, from under you, and with goals. So you begin with a snapshot, right? And maybe you define 5 different areas in that picture of that person's role, of what does great performance look like in that role? And you identify those. And then that person measures themselves and gets the feedback from all around that person. And most people are not perfect. I mean, you guys might be, and of course I might be, but most people really, they're not perfect. So therefore, they would therefore then have the humility to say, well, okay, I know, you know, I'm really good at this and I'm pretty good at that. And I know I need some work on this part. Okay. So then everybody gives that picture. And then there's a picture, right? That says of strengths, high strengths, medium strengths, low strengths or weaknesses. And then there's learning goals. Okay. So now we have a snapshot, right? And then we can say, what are the learning goals for next year? And now they're kind of obvious, right? So yep. What do you think are reasonable goals for next year? Reasonable goals. Okay, and what's a plan to reach them? You know, do I need to take a course? How am I going to reach them? Okay, and then let's meet in 6 months, whether it's in 3 months, 6 months, or 12 months. And how did I do? And then let's sit down and talk about that.
Yeah.
I think a pretty good performance review system looks something like that.
That's
what I think, right?
Yeah.
So then to come back to your question, so how does a person get fired? So obviously when they're way below the standards, right?
Yeah.
So now we look at that performance review and we say, okay, this level is good enough. This level is great. Like, let's give this person a super good bonus, right? Like, you did great.
Yeah.
Like if you're in the Boston Celtics, you were like Jason Tatum, you know, you were awesome. Man, right? Okay. Or you were fine, or you were just barely good enough, or this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
Right. Now let's take the case where a person's not good enough. Well, first of all, the person probably knows it. You're probably not really going to surprise them. Maybe you're going to surprise them, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. Now if the person's not good enough, I'm going to tell you a secret. They don't feel good. Yeah. They don't like that. The odds are actually they want to be. But, you know, let's sit down and let's talk about it. Like, I'd like to be a good carpenter. I'm not a good carpenter.
Same
I'm here. Not a good engineer. I'm not. So now I have two choices. Let's say I'm taking an engineering, okay? Either I need to get trained or I need to get the hell out of that job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Either that or I sit there and do a lousy job and feel bad. I mean, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. So now either I get committed to getting my skills up or I say, I'm in the wrong position here. I need to get in a different position, something that utilizes my strengths. There you go. Get the idea?
Yes, yeah. I absolutely love that because I really love putting together like systems and processes and KPI charts and stuff like that. So this just kind of reminds me of what I put together for like our employees at our coffee shop. And I guess I never even thought, oh, you can use this for your family as well. So it is just so interesting to really mix business and family and not, you know, look at them in two different ways like everybody does. So this is so interesting to me.
Yeah. I think I've taken more notes on this podcast episode than I have most episodes. So Same. This is really good. You're helping me avoid so many potholes right now.
Great. So, wonderful. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you. Another thing that I did want to ask about is one thing that me and you talked on the phone about before is the kind of like the exit planning. And I wanted to see what was your opinions and your best practices on that, because, you know, me and Jasmine, we're running a company that's going to be buying other businesses. And kind of like you said, a lot of these businesses are owned by families. And if that's if we don't know how to navigate that dynamic, it can end up even harming our business plan and what we actually want to do. So when it comes to handling the sale of a business, how have you seen that work out well? And what are some of the things that you should avoid in that process?
So when you talk about the sale of a business and particularly a family business, you know, typically you have, it depends sort of how old is that business and so on. But let's take a typical business with a patriarch and a couple of family members working in the business. Let's say the patriarch is somebody in their mid-60s. And let's say he or she has a couple of kids and so on. So they, first of all, do they want to sell the business? Maybe the kids want to run the business. Maybe they don't really want to sell the business. Who wants to sell the business? Why are they selling the business, right? There's a whole big decision-making process they need to be going through on their end. And maybe they're looking for capital. And maybe one or two or three of the kids want to stay in the business. Maybe dad wants to retire. In the businesses that I usually work in, dad never wants to retire. I've worked in businesses where dad's about 88, you know? And
still kicking.
Yeah. In fact, I worked with a case many, many years ago. It was a small business. And the son, I mean, he really wanted to run the business, and dad was only 55 and in good health. And the son was very unhappy. And I said to the son, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm waiting for dad to retire. And I said to the son, I said, well, have you noticed that your dad is like in good health? And he's only 55. I think he might be here strong and kicking for 10 to 20 years.
Yeah,
you'd be waiting like a long time. I mean, it's okay with me if you want to wait, you know. So there's a lot of, right? That's a part of the problem in family businesses a lot of times is that dad doesn't want to retire. And that dad may think, oh, the kids will never be ready. And it's really a disservice to the kids. Now, I mean, sometimes dad's right. Sometimes dad thinks the kids will never be ready. Maybe he's right sometimes. But sometimes he really isn't. And, you know, it's kind of like the old cartoon that says, well, son, I'm going to retire, and I'm announcing it tomorrow. I'm going to retire. And the son says, Dad, I'm retiring too. I'm 65, man. Now, it's hard to talk about this stuff. That's part of the great issue. Yeah. So the one little piece of advice I would give to you guys when you look at buying businesses is look at who's in the room with you and how much dialogue have they had, and ask some questions around that. Have all of your family members or, you know, key people have you been talking about? And is this a group decision, and are you comfortable with it, et cetera? And of course, sometimes there are last minute changes. I've worked with a number of companies where the key people involved had a deal which dad changed once he got older. Oh, I'll retire when I'm 70. Now that he's 69 and a half, he says 74. And then he says, you know, I'm feeling fine, 70, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Or, you know, son, I said you'd become the main guy, but your brother, he's kind of smarter in finance.
Oh, wow.
You know, when dad gets in this position of choosing between one son over another son or daughter, et cetera, well, that's going to tear apart the family. That's a horrible thing to do. And that's, of course, why they should consider a board, why they should consider a consultant, et cetera, et cetera. This is part of what makes family business so, so difficult.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you may be entering a situation where the family says, oh, my God, we can sell our business. We can get our bucks and get out of here. And hallelujah. It's so wonderful. That's the win-win.
Right.
That's the win-win. So that's the one you want to be looking for. But if you're into another kind of situation, you know, what you want to do, again, look for the dialogue. Look for who's in the room. Look for that quality of conversation. And are people all on board? Or is that really a very unhappy situation? And your purchase is going to increase the conflict and make for a greater unhappiness.
Yeah. So many great points. So for the listener, I'm sure they heard so much, but if they had to just walk away with one takeaway, what would that be?
Well, I would say just always keep in mind, family is family, business is business. And everybody wants both and know what you're doing. So when you're in the family, be in the family. And that family is supposed to be about love, and make that family about love. And if it's a choice, well, I choose family.
Absolutely.
Dollars can come and go, man.
They sure can.
They sure can, for sure.
And on the business side, it's a matter of working together with shared goals and then making a real plan. And what works best is developing that family business mission and vision and value statement, and then the whole rule book. And that needs to be created together. Now, underneath that, it means the family has to be able to talk. That's the trick. Now, lots of families have trouble doing that. I was a family therapist for 20 years. I think I can say that. So what happens if you can't talk? Get help. Call a consultant.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's okay. No big deal. A good consultant can help you out. And that's what I call the foundation piece. That's the foundation, that there needs to be enough communication skills in order to form a great family business team. That's what you want. Otherwise, you screw up the family. And that's a terrible thing. What you want is a wonderful family and a wonderful business. Everybody wants the same thing. That's what I think. And of course, you want to avoid those disasters of family members suing each other, or what I call going to war with each other. And yeah. So you need to avoid people like lawyers who are interested in having a legal battle. That is the last resort. That's like going to a divorce court. What people need to do is to find a way to work together, to develop those shared goals, to develop agreements on how to solve conflicts, to make decisions, and to deal with those very tricky issues of which we talked about just a few today. And it can be done. And when it's done well, it's all possible. And people can have beautiful families, make a bunch of money, and it can last for generations. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
For sure. So we talked about a lot on this podcast. And I mean, I take a little bit of notes on each podcast, but I took way more on this one because it was such good information. But we feel the need to ask this question to everybody who comes on because we always get very unique and interesting answers. And the question is, since you're on the Abundant Culture podcast, whether it be in your personal life, your business, or even in your spiritual life, how do you like to spread abundance to the people around you?
Oh, well, that's easy. I try to do it every day. every day. And for me, my passion is my work.
Yeah.
And so this is what I've been doing for about 25 years. And I do it in all kinds of different forums, but mostly working with families. And, you know, it's a lot of fun because I get to work often with three generations at the same time.
Wow.
And so I often work with the generations separately and then all together. That's and amazing. In some rare instances, I've worked with families, let's say 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and then recently. So I've worked with them on the transition from the first to the second generation, and then from the second to the third generation. And when you see that family working as a team, that is a thing of joy. So that's what I'm all about. I feel, you know, very honored, really, because I get to work with families and people at a very deep levels, very, very deep levels. Because for most people, nothing's more important to them than their family, as well as their wealth. And I'm not always successful. I'm like a coach, you know, nobody has to do what I say, and I can always be fired in a minute, and so on and so forth. But certainly there have been those places where I've been able to turn that family system around so they can create the bridges that they need to sustain for years. And the hope is over the generation. So for me, I feel blessed. I would use that word. That's what awesome. I would say.
I love it. So how would our listeners get into contact with either you or your team?
So the easiest way, of course, is through my webpage or my email. The web address is SII. The name of my little company is Strategic Initiatives Incorporated, SII-Inc, like incorporated, .net. So that's the web address, SII-Inc.net. The email address is my first name, Mark, M-A-R-C, @sii-inc.net. That's probably the easiest way, either through that webpage or the email. You'll see my phone numbers there. People are welcome to call. I always do introductory phone calls, introductory meetings in the beginning to find out what the issues are and to see if I can be of help. There's no charge for that. And then if I can be of help, then I make a little proposal and so on. And then people say, okay, thank you very much, and let's go forward, or nice to meet you, please, I never want to talk to you again, or whatever it is that is right for them.
Perfect. So we'll put that email and the links in the show notes. And we really want to thank you again, Mark, for coming on, giving us a wealth of knowledge, because like Joe said, this is like probably the most notes that we've taken on our own podcast in such a long time. We got so much information. I have so many good ideas even to put into our employee SOP. So this was phenomenal. And we thank you again for being a guest on the Abundant Culture Podcast.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. A pleasure to meet both of you. I wish you every success. And I think you're starting a wonderful little business. And I hope you can reach many people. And great to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Abundant Culture Podcast with Jazz and Joe. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, then leave an honest rating and review. And remember, we're ready to buy your business. So if you're ready to sell or passively invest in other small businesses, go to abundantculture.co for more information. We publish episodes every Friday, so we'll see you next week.